Let's take a look in this Acts chapter 20, these first six verses. After the uproar ceased, this was the uproar that was brought on by Demetrius the silversmith because their trade was being affected by Paul's teachings. Paul sent for the disciples, and after encouraging them, he said farewell and departed from Macedonia. And when he had gone through these regions and had given much encouragement, he came to Greece. There he spent 3 months. And when a plot was made against him by the Jews, as he was about to sail for Syria, he decided to return to Macedonia. And in verse 4 lists several men who accompanied him as he returned. It mentions a Berean Sopater. It mentions two men from Thessalonica, Aristarchus and Secundus. It mentions Gaius of Derbe, which is over in the Galatia area. And Timothy, also from that area. And it mentions two Asians, Tychicus and Trophimus. These went on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. So those men went ahead and are waiting for us over at Troas, which was on the east of the sea where they were going to cross over. And notice here we've got now the word us. And in verse 6 we have the word we. But we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days we came to them in Troas, where we stayed for 7 days. So, remember the last time on this journey, it's the last time to my knowledge, that we had the idea of us or we, was back when Paul left the city of Philippi. It had been we up until they left, which is an indication that Luke, the writer, stayed in Philippi and did not accompany them. But now, as they've come back through Philippi and they're sailing away, now it appears that Luke has rejoined them. So Luke will continue from here with them. Now, I'm not suggesting that Luke was in Philippi this whole time. I don't know. Scriptures don't tell us anything about Luke as far as what he was doing. But certainly he was left there and he rejoined the group there. Now, the reason I want to look into really 1st and 2nd Corinthians is that from those two letters we can learn something about Paul's travels and some travels of some other men that were aiding Paul. And to me, there's some value in doing this. One is, we'll get a better understanding of what Paul's work was, and we'll get to more detail in that. Another was, we'll see more about his relationship with the church in Corinth. A third is, we'll see something about Paul's, the daily concern that he expressed that he had for all the churches. And we'll learn something more about the work of those men who accompanied Paul. They weren't there just to be with him. They weren't there to do personal work for Paul, to do personal favors for him. They were there to assist in the work in the Lord's vineyard. Now, as I've already suggested, Luke's writings do not include all the traveling perhaps they include what Paul did, but don't give a lot of detail. But they don't include anything about the traveling of some of these men, or very little. And nor does Luke really address the reasons for some of this traveling. Now, if no other book did suggest, or give the reasons for this traveling and talk about some of the things these other men did and some of the reasons that Paul had for what he was doing, then we wouldn't be pursuing this. But it's because I believe there is sufficient information in these two letters, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and some of it is pretty helpful, as I've suggested, for some purposes of studying this, then I think we can learn some things that will be useful to us. Let's look just at a starting point back in chapter 19 and verse 21. Now, this is where it says that after these events, and this in this case is of the exorcism that was attempted by some Jewish people. It says that Paul resolved in the spirit to pass through Macedonia and Achaia and go to Jerusalem, saying, after being there, I must also see Rome. And having sent into Macedonia two of his helpers, Timothy and Erastus, he himself stayed in Asia for a while. So here Paul expresses what his plans are. He's going to go from there to Macedonia. He's going to go to Achaia and then to Jerusalem. And he expresses a desire that at some point he's going to go to Rome. But he's not ready to leave. He's still going to stay in Ephesus. So he sends ahead of him to Macedonia, Timothy and Erastus. Now, when we look over in chapter 20, what we just read, we'll see that he tried to follow that scenario. Not talking about the Rome part, because it's too early for that. But he tried to go from Macedonia to Achaia, and then from there to Jerusalem. But in verse 3 of chapter 20, after he spent 3 months in Greece or Achaia, it says, a plot was made against him by the Jews as he was about to sail for Syria. He wanted to go to Jerusalem. It would have been after he landed over on the coast that he would have gone to Jerusalem and then gone to Syria. Syria being where the church was that had sent him on these trips, Antioch of Syria, that we studied back in chapter 11 and 13. And so he holds to this except for this plot. And because of the plot, he doesn't return by ship from Corinth toward Syria. Instead, he returns back through Macedonia. Well, certainly, that was not a change in Paul's intention. It was brought about by the circumstance of that plot against him. However, when we turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, we learn that there was a change in Paul's plans. But this was a previous plan he had, and what I'll submit to you, for lack of a better term, it was his original plan, before the plan that was we just read in Acts chapter 19, in verse 21. But here in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, in verse 16, Paul says, I wanted to visit you on my way to Macedonia, and to come back to you from Macedonia, and have you send me on my way to Judea. So there he's saying he wanted to go from Ephesus, where this letter was written, and we'll look at that later. He wanted to go from Ephesus to Corinth, up to Macedonia, and then back to Corinth or to Achaia, and then from there go to Judea. And so his... Right. Did I say it wrong? Okay, 2 Corinthians 1:16. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, in 2 Corinthians 1:16, he shows us that his original planning was from Ephesus to Corinth, to Macedonia, back to Corinth, and then from there he would go to Jerusalem. So he's going to Corinth. He was planning to go to Corinth twice, but now we see that he's only going to go to Corinth one. At the close of the 1 Corinthians letter in chapter 16, we see again what Paul had recorded in his along with his not his original intent, but what he stated in Acts chapter 19. He said in verse 5, now this is after he talks about the collection for the brethren in Judea. He says in verse 5, I will visit you after passing through Macedonia. Well, this is in line with what we read in Acts 19 and what he did in Acts 20. He says, for I intend to pass through Macedonia. And perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter so that you may help me on my journey whenever I go. So we see there that he wanted to spend some amount of time. How long is winter? 3 months sounds good. And we see that's what he stayed in in Acts chapter 20 that we just read. He did stay for 3 months. He says, for I do not want to see you now just in passing. I hope to spend more time with you if the Lord permits. So again, the idea of I don't want to just go there in passing. I want to be able to spend some time. But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost. And this is how we know that this was the letter of 1 Corinthians was written from Pentecost. from Ephesus. He says, I'll stay there until Pentecost. For a wide door for effective work has opened for me, and there are many adversaries. So, as we closed out that portion in chapter 19, where people had come and taken their books, you know, where they had practiced their magical arts and so forth, and great fear had come upon, you know, the people, and the word of God prevailed mightily. Perhaps that's what he's referring to when he says here, a wide door for effective work has opened for me, and there are many adversaries. And then he says in verse 10, when Timothy comes, see that you put him at ease, for he is doing the work of the Lord as I am. And I recognize some other versions have a little different wording on that verse, and we'll look at that later on. But the anticipation is that Timothy is going to go to Corinth. Now, we know already from Acts 19 that he's been dispatched along with Erastus to go into Macedonia. And the idea would be that from Macedonia, he would go on down into Achaia and to visit with the Corinthians. And so they say, you know, accept him. He's doing the Lord's work just as I am. Don't despise him. Remember, in 1 Timothy, Paul wrote, let no man despise thy youth. Perhaps that's the idea that he has here. Help him on his way that he may return to me, for I'm expecting him with the brothers. So evidently there were some other people that he was expecting to come back as well. So again, at this point, when he wrote the Corinthian letter, he had changed his original planning to go to Corinth, to Macedonia, back to Corinth. I don't know how Paul got the word to the Corinthians or how they received the word of his original planning that he was going to go there first. I don't know how. It wasn't through this letter, because this letter, he was planning to go to Macedonia first. So evidently it was through one of the men who was helping him or someone else who had made a trip, and they went back and gave those words. So we know that Paul had received some words from the church of Corinth while he was at Ephesus. You remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, Paul talked about the house of Chloe. Chloe had sent word to him concerning the division that was going on in Corinth. Some saying, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos. They were not in the same mind and the same judgment. So Paul was aware from words from the house of Chloe of some issues there. Also, we see that there was a visit by three men, Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Archaeus. I believe it's in chapter 16 of 1 Corinthians. These men had come to visit him and undoubtedly had told him some of the things that was going on over there. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the chapter that talks so much about marriage, Paul opens up the letter concerning the things that they had written to him. So was that a separate letter? Was that some words that were brought to him by Chloe or by these men that came? I don't know. But Paul had received, you know, words about through several sources about problems that were going on in the church of Corinth. So it could have been by, you know, through these avenues here that word got to him what he planned to do. But that would be conjecture, at least on my part. We do know that at the time he wrote Acts 19, by the time the events in Acts chapter 19 occurred there, when he stated in verse 21 of what his plans were, and we wrote the letter, he was planning to go to Macedonia first. And his original intent was to go through Achaia first. Well, why is that important? I mean, is that just a bunch of, you know, here, there? Does it really matter? And I think there's some things that we can learn from that. The question is, why did Paul change his plans? He was accused in the second Corinthian letter in chapter 1 and verse 17. We looked at verse 16 where he gave his original plan. I wanted to visit you on my way to Macedonia and to come back to you from Macedonia. And he asked the question, was I vacillating? You see, was I being fickle in what I said? Did I just say something, you know, just to say it, just to kind of make you happy? Is that why I did that? So evidently there was a group that was in Corinth that was accusing Paul of being fickle, of vacillating, of saying one thing and doing another, and not being able to be depended on for his word. And that's important to Paul, and he wants to respond to it. So a part of this letter is in response to not only that question we see right here, but also that attitude. Now, there's a key to understanding Paul. And we know that Paul didn't change his mind because of just a whim on his part or just something that was personal to him. A key to understanding this is in a verse that you're familiar with, and that's in the 2 Corinthians letter in chapter 11. Now, Paul talks about his suffering as an apostle, and he goes through all of these things that happened to him, being shipwrecked and robbed and left for dead and beaten and all of those things. And as horrible as those things are, as difficult as those things were on Paul, I want to draw your attention to verse 28, because this is something else. It doesn't have to do with that, you know, the physical beatings and so forth that he went through. It says, apart from all these other things, apart from all of that I've just listed, there is the constant, the daily pressure, concern that he has for all of the churches. So we see in Paul a genuine care for these churches that he's working to establish and build up. He's concerned about them. He's concerned about their well-being. In the first letter, as he was talking to them about their carnality and so forth and things they needed to grow in, he says in verses 1 and 2 of 1 Corinthians 4, he says, "This is how you should regard us, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found trustworthy." Paul regarded himself as a steward of the Word of God. He was going to be faithful to that Word, and it was necessary that he be trustworthy. And so for Paul to be accused of not being trustworthy went against the very nature of what he was trying to do. And so it was a serious charge. And it's a charge that he has to address. And he chooses to address them that, basically, as we look through these letters, is by what they knew of him when he was in there and declaring the motives that he had to them. And also showing the pure motives of those men that he had sent to them, men such as Silas, men such as Titus. So, we can go back and just look at some of the work that Paul had done. When he was in Philippi, Luke remained. Now, the idea would be, if we see what else has been going on, Luke remained to help build up the church in Philippi. When he left Macedonia, when he was forced out from the city of Berea, see, Timothy and Silas remained. And then when Paul got to Athens, he sent for them to come to him. And then when he went from Athens down to, before he left Athens, he sent Timothy back to the Thessalonians. We saw that in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. He sent Timothy back because he wanted to know how they were doing. So, again, we see this idea of the concern that Paul had. Now, I'm reminded, and as I was studying this, I've thought of some of the men that we support. And I see some of this same attitude of being concerned. I see it in Brother Williams. Brother Williams is working in South Africa. He's concerned not just about where he is, but he's concerned about the whole area. Now, his work, as far as I understand, has pretty well been confined to South Africa. While that's a large country within itself, it's also a very diverse country, a lot of cultures. And so he's dealing with a lot of people who have very different backgrounds. And so, you know, it's a very difficult work. And I'm sure Brother Williams is concerned at his age, what's going to become of the work. And it's a great comfort to him to know that his grandson Joel is, as I understand, going to stay and carry on the work. But here's a man that I see in him that's concerned about all of these churches that he, through the years, has worked to have a part in establishing, either directly or indirectly. I see the same thing in other men that we support. Emilio Acevedo. I see his concern not only in Chile, where he lives, but when he goes to Peru. And he works with brethren there that have not had the gospel. They've moved, well, they've had it, but they didn't pay any attention to it. They've removed out of, you know, they've come out of denominationalism. They need a lot of teaching. And he has been, you know, even going up there 30 days at a time and living in not good conditions. I mean, very, very poor conditions. And his wife has gone with him and staying more than once to work with these people. There's no money involved in that for him. He's not getting paid at all by them. He has to even support himself, of course. We're helping support that. And personally, I appreciate that very much. But you know, there's no support coming to him out of Peru for doing that. And I see it with another man we support, Rumed Amador, as he goes to various places he goes to, Cuba, Mexico, and down into South America. Matter of fact, he has a trip planned to go back to Peru because he and Emilio together, because one thing they've observed there is that the preachers don't even know how to pray, much less how to preach. So what have you got? So they're planning to go back, Lord permitting, and basically just hold a preacher session for, I don't know, a week and a half or 2 weeks. I don't know exactly what their plans are. Sometime later on this year to teach, you know, the preachers some basic things that they need. While it's commendable these preachers have left the denominational world, certainly their understanding is not to the level that it needs to be, you know, preachers of the gospel. So again, and there's other men I'm sure that we support that have the same attitude that aren't coming to my mind. But again, it's this care that, you know, and this concern that they feel for the brethren here, for the brethren there, and the brethren in other places. This is what Paul had. And this pressure on him was something that he felt on a daily basis. So to accuse Paul of vacillating was something that just went against the very nature of Paul. Certainly Paul didn't vacillate when he was antagonizing the disciples of Christ, when he was persecuting them. He didn't vacillate them then. He was against, you know, those who followed Christ. He persecuted them to the end. But now that he's come to the truth, he's just as zealous, he's just as strong, he's just as purposeful in conducting his business as an ambassador for Christ. So why did Paul change his plans? Well, again, the verse that we're reading here, verses 16 and 17 of 2 Corinthians chapter 1. 2 Corinthians 1, 16 and 17. He says, was I vacillating? Well, the answer is no. And he goes on to say in verse 23, but I call God to witness against me. It was to spare you that I refrained from coming again to Corinth. Not that we lord it over your faith, but we work with you for your joy, for you stand firm in your faith. For I made up my mind not to make another painful visit to you. For if I cause you pain, who is there to make me glad but one whom I have pained? And I wrote as I did, talking about the First Corinthian letter, so that when I came, I might not suffer pain from those who should have made me rejoice. For I felt sure of all of you that my joy would be the joy of you all. For I wrote to you out of much affliction and anguish of heart and with many tears, not to cause you pain, but to let you know the abundant love that I have for you. So Paul didn't go there because he just was flippant and just kind of changed his mind. He went there. He changed his plans because he wanted to give them time to change. They had the 1 Corinthian letter that listed all of those issues. And so he wanted them to have time to respond to that. How were they going to take it? What were they going to do about it? He wanted to know. He wanted to give them time. He didn't want to go back with a rod. And so he says, I'm going to wait, and I will come to you later. Now, we see some of the men that were involved in this, men such as Paul himself and Timothy and Silas. These men who cared for this work. He mentions them in verse 19 of chapter 1. So he talks about when we've gone to you, in a straightforward manner. We've been honest with you. We've dealt right before you. So when Paul had learned of these problems in Corinth, he did two things. In the 1 Corinthian letter, the 4th chapter, he says there that he says, I urge you to be imitators of me in verse 16. This is 1 Corinthians 4 and 16. He had written to them already in these first 4 chapters talking about their carnality, about their division, and how they needed to grow out of this. And he says, I urge you, be imitators of me. That is why I sent you Timothy. So Timothy went with a purpose. It was to help lead them out of these, I'll call it, spiritual shortcomings that they had. Some of the carnal way of thinking, the greed, the struggle for power, all of those things that they were doing. Timothy was sent to urge them to be imitators of Paul. You remember Paul didn't want John Mark to go with him on that second trip, and then we're talking about the third trip. The idea is that Paul understood this trip was going to be rough. He might not have known this particular circumstance, but he knew there was going to be some rough things. And Timothy has proven himself to be, even though Timothy is very young, he's proven himself to be trusted by Paul. But so he says in verse 17, that is why I sent to you Timothy, my beloved and faithful child in the Lord, to remind you of my ways in Christ as I teach everywhere in every church. Some are arrogant, as though I were not coming. So evidently there were men there in Corinth that were saying, oh, Paul's not coming. He writes this kind of stuff, but he's not going to come see us. So, you know, he's not going to be true to his word. But he says, I will come to you soon if the Lord wills, and I will find out not the talk of these arrogant people, but indeed what power they have, what power they had to persuade, to control the rest of the congregation. So he took the action of sending Timothy on ahead, and he took the action of the letter that he wrote. Now, and then, of course, he planned to go himself as a third action if the Lord permitted. Evidently, though, Timothy was not to arrive when the letter arrived. The letter was sent on. It says, we saw in chapter 1 Corinthians 16:10, it was when Timothy arrives. That's what the letter said. So they had the letter, and Paul was expecting Timothy to come later, so they would know that Timothy would have been there at some point later on. Now, again, the question, why did Paul change his mind? He said also in the, I believe it's in the 1 Corinthians chapter 4, he said in verse 21, what do you wish? Shall I come to you with a rod or with love and a spirit of gentleness? So he wanted some others to go there first and try to work with them such that he didn't come again with a rod. He wanted to go in the spirit of love with gentleness and meekness. So in this same letter, in the 16th chapter, Paul wanted to stay in Ephesus because a wide door for effective work had opened for him. There were many adversaries to that work, but he wanted to stay. So this goes along with what we've read as far as his plans. And also we see in this chapter that he wanted to spend time with them, not just pass through. Now, on the way to Macedonia, as recorded in Acts 20 that we read earlier, after the uprising by Demetrius and the silversmiths, it says Paul, you know, departed and went to Macedonia. It doesn't talk about him stopping in Troas. Well, we wouldn't know that he stopped in Troas, except that it tells us that he did in the Second Corinthian letter. And notice in chapter 2 of Second Corinthians, chapter 2 and verse 12, Paul says, "When I came to Troas to preach the gospel of Christ, even though a door was opened for me in the Lord." So here again, he's left Ephesus where there was a door open for him. He goes to Troas and there's a door open for him. He'd like to spend longer in Ephesus. He'd like to stay longer in Troas. Well, why didn't he? Well, notice verse 12. He says, "My spirit was not at rest because I did not find my brother Titus there. So I took leave of them and went on to Macedonia." So this is the first time now that we've, I believe, learned of Titus in this. Haven't known through Luke's accounts that this man Titus was involved. So again, this is, we see Titus's work here, and we learn of his involvement with the Corinthians. So he wanted to know how they were doing. He expected to meet Titus there in Troas, but he didn't find him. So he says, "Because my spirit was not at rest, I left and went on to Macedonia." The idea would be that in Macedonia, he would find him. So now we've already seen that he had sent Timothy, but when you notice and you'd say, "Well, why didn't Timothy give him a report?" Well, looking at 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 1, we see that Timothy is there with Paul. Paul, an apostle of Christ, used by the will of God, and Timothy, our brother. So it appears that perhaps Timothy never made it to Corinth. And it's interesting because we don't have a report back from him. He's there when Paul writes to them, and Paul was really concerned about receiving words back on how the Corinthians had accepted that first letter, a very stern and rebuking letter. But yet, if Timothy went, where's the report? We'll see in chapter 7 there's a report from Titus, but not a report from Timothy. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 10, the New American Standard Version and the King James Version, I believe the King James does, says, "If Timothy comes," as though Paul recognized that Timothy might not. I read from the English Standard Version, which says, "When Timothy comes." And I don't know which is correct from the standpoint of Greek, but I would agree with the New American Standard and the King James from a contextual standpoint. Not that I can tell it from the context of 1 Corinthians 16, but from the context of 2 Corinthians 1 and 1, that Timothy was with Paul, and also from the standpoint of 2 Corinthians, there's no report back from Timothy on how it went. Instead, he receives that report from Titus. So, turning over to chapter 7 of this 2 Corinthians letter, he says in verse 5, 2 Corinthians 7 and 5, "For even when we came into Macedonia, our bodies had no rest." Well, afflicted, you see, in Ephesus, now afflicted again in Macedonia. Had been afflicted originally in Macedonia, and now again. But he says, "We were afflicted in every turn, fighting within and fighting without and fears within." But notice what he says in verse 6. But first, before we look at 6, notice in 5. You see this fightings and, fear going on. There's not discouragement. That's not the word I'm looking for. But the need for good news. You know, the battle is going on. The battle is tough. You're fighting with the Jews here. Concerns about the acceptance of the gospel on the other hand, and so there's turmoil going on inside. This daily pressure, this daily concern that's going on with Paul. And you can kind of sense it here. So Paul is wanting some good news. Well, notice in verse 6, "But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted by you, as he told us of your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoice still more. For even if I made you grieve with my letter, I don't regret it. Though I did regret it, for I see that the letter grieved you, though only for a while." And of course, in this, he has reference back to the sternness of the letter, urging them to repent of certain things that they needed to take care of. Their attitude toward Christ needed to change. Their attitude toward their own selves needed to change. And so it was a stern letter that Paul had written to them. So down in 12 and 13, "So although I wrote to you, it was not for the sake of one who did the wrong, nor the sake of the one who suffered the wrong." Well, we know that he was concerned about them. He was concerned about the man living with his father's wife, because he said there in the 5th chapter of 1 Corinthians that the idea of delivering him to Satan was so that in the end his soul might be saved. He was concerned about that. But the point is that his real concern was that in order that your earnestness for us might be revealed to you in the sight of God. So there were these men there that were arrogant, saying, "Paul is not going to come back. There's no need to listen to Paul. There's no need to follow the teachings of Paul. He's gone. You can forget about Paul and forget about what he taught." And so when he sent this letter, it was Paul's concern was, were they going to listen to what Paul had written? Were they going to pay attention to it? Was it going to change their lives? Or are they going to reject that in favor of these men who are arrogant and puffed up and said, forget about Paul? And so it's much to Paul's comfort that Silas brings this report that it says, your earnest for us was revealed. In other words, you chose to listen to the things that we had to say. You chose to read our letter and take it to heart and put aside, not listen to those men who were puffed up and claimed that we were vacillating, or that he particularly was vacillating and would not be coming back to them. So, and we see also in the next verse, "Therefore we are comforted, and besides our own comfort, we rejoice still more at the joy of Titus, because his spirit had been refreshed by you all." So Titus came back with good news. He came back full of joy himself over the work that had been accomplished in the reaction of the people in Corinth to Paul's letter. Now, there was another reason that Paul expressed, and some it affected some of the travels of these men as well. And we've got that in the 8th chapter of this 2 Corinthians letter. Now, remember, we didn't read it, but I just made a reference to it in 1 Corinthians 16, verses 1 through 4, that Paul was writing to them to prepare this collection for the needy saints in Jerusalem. The saints in Jerusalem had a need. It may have been due to the original need they had when the gospel and kingdom was first established there, because an influx of people had come in. It may have been because of the famine that was in Acts chapter 11 that came in the days of Claudius. It may have been because of persecution that was going on. I don't know that we're told the basis for the famine. But that collection in 1 Corinthians 16, Paul urged them to prepare. So Titus, we see, is one that was played a big role in that. In 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 6, where he's talking about this collection, the same subject again, he says, "We urge Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace." So Titus had already been among the Corinthians working with this toward this collection, had already been doing that. And now he wants Titus to complete this. Now notice as we turn over to verse 16, "But thanks be to God who put in the heart of Titus the same earnest care that I have for you. See, Paul's care, this was not just Paul. All the men that he sent had this same care for the brethren. Silas, Timothy, and Titus. They all cared for the brethren. None of these men operated off of a selfish motive. None of these men were concerned about their own safety or about their own life. That's not to say it might have not crossed their mind. I'm not trying to imply that. But it was important to them. They put their life in the hands of the Lord. And they left it there. So Titus had this same earnest care. For he not only accepted our appeal, but himself being very earnest, he is going to you of his own accord. With him we are sending the brother who is famous among all the churches for his preaching of the gospel. I don't know who that brother is, but notice Titus is going to go back. So he's going to go back evidently before Paul goes after he leaves Macedonia. So again, we see more traveling by one of the associates of Paul to go down to Corinth. Now, it's interesting. While the Acts account acknowledges, certain work of Paul, Silas, and Timothy, it's only other accounts such as this that acknowledge the work of Titus. We would not know that, just reading the account in Acts. Now, there's an observation that, you can evaluate if it's a good one or not. And it's back in Acts chapter 20, and this is the last passage that we'll refer to, and we've already read this. You remember that we said from a 2 Corinthians letter that there was an open door for Paul in Troas, but he had to leave early because he was concerned about not meeting Titus there and didn't know, the situation with the brethren down in Corinth. So he left for Macedonia. So he left an opportunity. So it says in verse 6, when we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days we came to them at Troas, we stayed for 7 days. Now we know from verse 16 of this chapter that he was hastening to get to Jerusalem. He wanted to get to Jerusalem. Okay, he wanted to be there by a certain time, Pentecost, so probably so that people would be there and he could disperse the funds there in Jerusalem. But he carried those funds with him. But nonetheless, he was hastening to get to Jerusalem, but he still took 7 days to spend in Troas. Perhaps it was because that trip had been cut short when he was there before, and he wanted to try to be with them for at least a few days. It's just an observation on my part. It may not be really worth anything. But I hope that looking at what has been done, on this short few verses of 1 through 6, all that we've talked about happened during this time. But yet, none of that's revealed here. But so, to me, it gives us a better understanding of what was going on, that it wasn't in Luke's interest and the interest of the Holy Spirit to record this in the book of Acts. Yet we can learn this as we look through some of these other books. And with that, Lord willing, we'll pick up Sunday, Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. Thanks.